McGuire, a man of fire, will live in history. He tipped the scales at 99 and measured 5 feet 3. One swing of his right would end a fight, a wondrous thing to see. Oh, Mickey McGuire, that ball of fire, a mighty man was he. When Mickey McGuire went out a fish, he told the greatest tale. He said the fish that got away would break the biggest scale. He'd whittle a tree of hickory, his hook was just a nail. And then he would state that for his bait, he always used a whale. Oh, McGuire, the liar, he came from County Cork. He stopped to chat at the drop of a hat. Oh, how that man could talk. Talk, 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 talk. He said that he sailed the seven seas to find a beach to comb. They made him drink so many toasts he couldn't see for foam. I come from the great explorers, that is why I yearn to roam. The very same night, to their delight, he couldn't find his home. Oh, McGuire, the liar, he came from County Cork. He stopped to chat at the drop of a hat. So how that man could talk. Talk, 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 talk. One day when the racers came to town, McGuire told the boss, "Say, if you need a jockey, I'm the greatest one, of course." Believe it or not, he came in first, but still it was a loss. 'Cause Mickey McGuire, the ball of fire, forgot to ride the horse. Oh, McGuire, the liar, he came from County Cork. He stopped to chat at the drop of a hat. So how that man could talk. Talk, 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 talk. To conquer the English Channel was McGuire's greatest wish. I'd swim it underwater, 'cause I swim just like a fish. He said that he'd break the record, and the people won't forget. He broke the record for staying down. They haven't found him yet. Oh, McGuire, the liar, he came from County Cork. He stopped to chat at the drop of a hat. Oh, how that man could talk. Oh, McGuire, the liar, he came from County Cork. He stopped to chat at the drop of a hat. How that man could talk.
Very good, Dennis. And while I'm on the subject, I'd like to say that although you've been with me a good many years, your voice keeps improving all the time. And on this last show of the season, it's a pleasure. I want to tell you, it's a pleasure to have you on my show because of your talent, your loyalty, and your...
How can you read that stuff? Doesn't it make you sick?
Go be nice to people.
And without further ado, good afternoon to you, Dennis. How are you?
Good afternoon, Morgan. Fine. How are you?
All right. You're coming through loud and clear.
Well, that's good. You're coming through very clear and loud.
Oh, thank you. Now, I have to do something very first before I do anything else. I have two hellos for you, three actually. Two friends of yours when you're here in Boston with the great broadcast of 44. Mel Simon and Kenny Meyer both told me to tell you hello. They heard that you're going to be on the show with me, and they said, make sure you tell him that we said hi. And I want to make sure I clear that up first before I do anything else.
And I want to say hi to Mel and to Myers, too, because they're real great people.
Okay. Now,
I appreciated the help that they gave me when I was in Boston with the big broadcast of 44. Hey, incidentally, I heard that tape you just played of the Benny Show.
Yeah.
And I'd appreciate it if you'd send me I Don't Have It. As a matter of fact, I can't recall singing that song.
That was you, believe me. That was not an imitator. That was you. And tell you what, we have your address, and we will send you... A copy of it?
I'd appreciate it. A cassette of it, whatever you got.
We'll send you a tape of the whole interview, and that will be on it.
Beautiful.
Okay. Now, speaking of the big broadcast of 44, a lot of people probably have a recollection of that. That was about 4 years ago you were here in Boston with that?
No, it was about 3 years.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, what was the plot of that?
We were putting on a radio show at the time of 1940. That was the whole idea. And, of course, we had Harry James and his wonderful orchestra, and my good sidekick, Don Wilson, who has since departed about 8 months ago. And, of course, we had Hildegard and Fran Warren and the Pied Pipers and the Ink Spots. And Lanny Ross was with us at that time. And when we closed in Boston, we played a month there. We came out to San Diego. And Gordon McRae joined us in place of Lanny Ross at that time. And we continued the tour from 2 weeks in San Diego. Then we were a month in Los Angeles. And then we went up to San Francisco for another month. And then we went back east and played we were up at Cohasset down in the Cape, and had a great time in the Providence area and in the New England area, really. And it was a very successful show, and we closed in Waterbury, I believe it was, in Connecticut at the theater in the round there.
Now, what sort of reception did you get? I know that every now and then when you get to do live theater, you get all types of comments from people. What were the most consistent comments that you got from playing San Diego and Frisco and Boston from the audiences that came to see you?
Well, we got a very good reaction from people of our generation who remembered radio, and also, strangely enough, from the younger group of kids, because they hadn't been conversant with that type of music and also with that type of comedy. And I think that's why there's a great resurgence, I think, in interest in radio and the shows that were put on at that time. They still play the Jack Benny shows, and they play the Fred Allen shows and the old George Burns shows, and the kids all say, hey, that was pretty good comedy. So they hold up very well. And I think the reaction that we got was that the young people, they started jitterbugging in the aisles, and the older people, of course, enjoyed the music of Harry James and the music of 44s.
Now, a lot of people, when they listen to old radio tapes, for example, there's a gentleman on our station, Tom Heathwood, who 7 days a week plays the old Jack Benny program and other radio programs from the heyday of old-time radio, and they hear audience reactions to the comedies and the variety shows of the day. But I know a lot of people have not a misconception, but they don't know physically how you were set up. If everybody was around one microphone or two microphones doing their lines, or if you actually were doing it as a stage play. How did you do the Jack Benny show when you were doing it live on radio?
Well, we did it at Studio B in NBC Studios on Sunset Boulevard and Vine Street. And we had a live audience, usually around, I'd say about 200 people. It was a small studio, and we were on a stage, and we had the two microphones, and then the orchestra was mic'd, and also there was a mic at the sound, where the sound was, you know, that where the sound man worked. We had a mic there, so they would pick up all the sound effects, if it was a slap of a hand or whatever they would have. So we stood up there. The cast, Jack and Mary, used one mic facing one another, and Don Wilson or myself, we would use the other mic facing each other or facing Jack, whoever we had the conversation with. And, after every show was over, the first 5 years, you know, people would come up to me and say, hey, do you mind if I have your script? And I'd hand them the script. You know, I never saved one of my Jack Benny radio scripts from the first inception of when I went on the Benny show, which was on October the 8th, 1939, and then I went in the Navy. But so, and after I got out, then I used to save the scripts, but I never saved them. I used to give them away, and they're priceless today.
Now,
but that's the physical setup that we used, and that's what we try to do with the big broadcast of 1944. On a stage, you know, in a way, is the way we used to do during World War II. We did command performance for Armed Forces Radio and mail call, and that's the way we did those shows, was with the orchestra on a stage and an audience, usually about 500 people, and using the microphone set up there. I know my kids said the same way. They used to ask, I try to describe what radio was like when we did it, and of course they had no idea of it, and they say, well, how could you see it? You know, because all they can think of is looking at the tube today.
Right. Now, when you did this, mentioning the scripts, naturally you rehearsed and you did your blocking or whatever was necessary to get everything just down pat, but were you using your scripts when you were doing the shows live, or could you have if you wanted to, or by time showtime was ready, you had memorized everything that was involved?
No, you would never memorize it because we, first of all, we did not rehearse that much, and there were changes practically up in time, until the time we would come in to rehearse on that Sunday. Jack did not believe in over-rehearsing. We only read that script a total of 3 times before we put it on the air. And that, in other words, we didn't labor over the thing. We just read it through, and Jack said, well, that's it. And he'd sit down with the writers and say, this seemed to me to play. And they'd say, well, you ought to change this joke or this idea and everything else. So Jack did not over-rehearse because comedy is not funny if you try to belabor it, and, you know, and try to be cute with it. And, you know where the laughs are coming. And you don't, really, until you stand up there and do it in front of an audience. You'll get different reactions. So he never over-rehearsed, and I would usually have the lyrics to the song. I never memorized the songs. You'd have the lyrics of the songs right on a stand in front of the microphone when came your time to sing. And you did not memorize, and you did not deviate from the script because, you know, you're on a time basis, and you didn't have to deviate. You had the greatest material, the greatest writers in the world, so why would you try to be funnier than they?
So none of the songs that you did, you ever really rehearsed, or not to the point of getting it down pat? You just came in and the songs were on the sheet?
The first time I heard it was when the orchestra part of it was when I came in on Sunday morning. I usually got there an hour ahead of the rest of the cast, and I rehearsed with the orchestra. I had probably rehearsed myself with my own pianist or the arranger, and I was familiar with what routine I was going to do with the song, but I had never heard the orchestration until I came in on Sunday morning.
That is unbelievable. I'm saying that from a standpoint of knowing good music and knowing how people handle music, and it's just almost unbelievable that somebody could do as well as you do with songs and not really not have the feeling.
But everybody else was doing it. I wasn't doing anything different than anyone else.
That was a common occurrence back
then,
radio?
That was a common thing in those days. You did not memorize the songs unless, you know, songs that you were totally familiar with and that you had performed elsewhere, you know, at personal appearances or anything like that.
We'll see again. I guess my reason for saying this, I am again from the child. I'm a television child. I'm a media child. And naturally, you don't get that same response. When you see something on television, you don't see the sheets. And people have already, committed their songs to memory. And
yeah, well,
that's the difference between television and old-time radio.
Yeah, well, even on television, they're reading a lot of people are reading it. A lot of the, you can see it, the newscasters are certainly not memorizing
everything. Oh, that's
true. They're reading everything. Bob Hope reads mostly all of his. Dean Martin is forever looking at the idiot sheets.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people on TV don't memorize. And Jack Benny never did. In the latter part of his years, when we were on TV, he did not memorize a lot of the things, you know. But he was familiar with what he was doing, and they always had the cue cards in case he might forget.
Or lose his voice.
You know, so they were there.
I tell you what, I have to take a break, but I want to ask you this question, and you can think about it during the break.
All right.
And when we come back, we can find out the answer. Simply just want to know how you were chosen back in 39 to do the Jack Benny radio program, and I'm sure there's an interesting story behind that. We can find that out after this break.
Okay, fine, Morgan.
Thank you, Dennis. And Dennis and I will be back, I'd say in about 2 or 3 minutes. Everybody hang with us. If there's a question that you want me to ask Dennis, you can call in on the separate lines, 969-1060 or 651-1060, and we'll write them down, and I will make sure that he hears your question. The time here at Touch 1060 is 25 past 3.
Lipstick on my glass.
Lipstick? Well, I'll call the waitress and tell her...
Oh, no, this is exciting.
Oh. Dad, what's exciting about lipstick on a glass?
It's spring, Dad. Spring.
Oh, be quiet.
Well, say, Jack, there's a new record here in the jukebox called Deary. It's sung by Dennis.
By me? Oh, boy, I'm going over and play it.
All right, go, go.
Nobody touch my glass.
We won't. We won't. Play the record, will you?
To the Sousa Bend, my wasn't the music when charter party down by the seashore. Every 4th of July, test your memory, my dearie. Do you recall when Henry Ford couldn't even fix a running board under a Chandler stick? Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by. Dearie, do you remember when most gents owned a spare stock, wing collars and derby hats, lovely ladies swinging their bustles? May those gentlemen sigh, test your memory, my dearie. Do you remember watching John L. win every fight, 'cause nobody ducked from Sullivan's right? Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by. Jackie, do you remember leaving Waukegan, Illinois? Gosh, weren't you just a boy? That was long before Love and Bloom, and maybe Brahms' Lullaby. Test your memory, my Jackie. Can you remember when your bankroll was very scant, when you played a lady in Charlie's Aunt? Jackie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
I'm 39.
You're much older than I.
Okay, for you youngsters out there, that was Dennis Day. Everybody over the age of 10 remembers Dennis from the Jack Benny radio program and countless other things, and that's who I am speaking with at the moment. Dennis, does that bring back a memory or two?
Yes, it does, Morgan. can you tell me when we did that? I can't jog my memory.
All right. We don't have the exact date, but when we send you the tape, we can send you the background material on what we used to get it.
Yeah, all right, fine. Send that one to me, too.
Be happy to. All right, the question that I asked before the break was, how were you chosen to do the Jack Benny program?
How I, I tell you, I had loved singing when I was a kid. I was with the choir, and then when I went to college, I went to Manhattan College in the Bronx in New York. That's where I was born and raised. And in my senior year, I was president of the Manhattan College Glee Club. And I did a couple of radio shows with Larry Clinton on his Saturday Night Campus Club. And I was lucky enough to be chosen three times from the Metropolitan Colleges. And I appeared with Larry Clinton and B. Wayne and Ed Hurley. He was the announcer on that show. And it was a Bostonian who was the producer of the show, too, as a matter of fact. And I... took some air checks of the songs that I sang on that particular, those particular shows. And after I was out of college about 6 months, Kenny Baker left the Jack Benny radio show. He had a slight argument or disagreement with Jack, and you know what, over money.
Yeah.
And
I was about to say that.
Thank God he left, because I probably wouldn't be talking to you now if he hadn't. Because he left, and Jack and his agents were looking for a replacement, because Kenny was very, very popular, and they were auditioning singers all over the country. As a matter of fact, I think they told me afterwards there were over 500 singers that auditioned for the Jack Benny radio show. So somebody persuaded me. I'd had no experience in show business. They said, why don't you send one of the air checks over to Benny's agent? What have you got to lose? Well, I did. And by good fortune, Mary Livingston heard it, and she liked it, and she brought it to Jack and persuaded him to audition me. Well, he did. I auditioned at the NBC studios in Rockefeller Center in New York. And after the audition was over, there was nothing said. And about a week later, Jack gave me a round-trip ticket to come out to California to audition for his writers and producers. And this ticket was on the Golden State Limited, the Freddie Laker of the trains at that time.
Yeah.
No frills. And I got out here and I auditioned for the writers and producer. And after that was over, another week went by. Jack was at the World Fair up at Treasure Island in San Francisco. He came back down, and I got a call from him and to come down to his office. And I went down there, and it was at that meeting that I knew that I was going to be the new singer on his radio program. Not when I signed the contract, mind you, Morgan, but when Jack took back the other half of the train ticket. He did. I kid you not. They took back the other half of the train ticket, and I stayed with him here. It was a two-week option in the contract, you know. If I didn't make good in 2 weeks, he could drop me. Then he could pick me up for the next 11 weeks. And the next 13, and the 13, because radio was in a 13-week cycle at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So that first year, I was in a 13-week cycle. And at the end of that year, then he had to pick me up for a full year, so I stayed with him as a total of 25 years. So that was really, really a whole lifetime and a wonderful part of my life. And everything that, of course, that I have, I can truthfully and humbly say Jack Benny was responsible for it.
And it all led from you sending in your rear check.
Yeah, that's right. And by being in the right place at the right time, and there was must have been a lot of prayers for me or something, and I got the show. And when I went on that first night, I got to tell you, man, I was scared. But I made up my mind. I said, well, I'm going to do the best I can. And if that's not good enough, I've at least made a good try. So I did, as I say, I stayed with Jack for over 25 years.
Yeah, but you know what? Talent sometimes is the best way to conquer the butterflies.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you do the best you can. And it was, you know, that's why they brought in the character of my mother, Verna Felton. She was the protector because, you see, I'd had very little experience in radio or in show business, for that matter, and did not have the confidence that would be necessary to be on the top program in the nation. So they brought in my mother, the character of my mother, played by a great actress, Verna Felton.
Yeah.
And she really did most of the lines in the beginning because she was the protector between Jack Benny and myself. And I would, you know, use those silly little things, you know, like say hello to the microphone. I'd say hello, say hello to the people. That was it, you know. And I'd say hello to the people. You know, I played a silly, naive kid, but I guess that was partly in keeping with the character that Jack wanted and also my own. By nature, I was kind of retiring and not a brash person or anything like that.
Well, good writers, as you mentioned, you have the best writers in the world, and they see something that they know they can work well with and get good laughs out of and still make the show click, so that's probably why they took that direction.
Right, uh-huh. And they discovered that I could do dialects and everything else, and they started working that in. I did impressions like Jerry Colonna and Ronald Coleman and a lot of other different things, you know, the German General Rommel and Japanese admirals in World War II.
Can you still do a couple of those now?
Well, I don't know what you are asking me. So, you know, very funny that Japanese are very beautiful language. It are the language of the Ritter Cherry Blossom, the language of the Ritter Riceberg. It are the language of Toyota, Honda, Datsun, Isuzu, Mitsubishi, or Kawasaki. Kawasaki! Oh, keep the good times roaring. Oh, my gosh.
Well, let's see. You mentioned you also do a little German accent. Can you...
Yeah, I would do one of those things, you know, all verstorben reiten rum, von der aufgespielten reiten, which way is Cairo? And kind of crazy things. But the character, of course, that I played on the show was a naive and silly and sometimes downright stupid character. But, of course, you know, the character had a certain amount of logic to it, and, of course, the logic was always to drive Jack Benny nuts.
Yeah.
And I did that in so many scripts, you know. I remember once I went over to his house and I had to rehearse the song I'm going to sing on the following Sunday's program. When I did, after it was all over, Jack said, oh, that'll be fine, Dennis. I said, well, thank you, Mr. Benny, and I got to go now. He showed me through the door, and I was about to leave, and I turned and I said, goodbye, Mr. Benny, and have a nice trip. And do you know, I left. He went upstairs, and he was halfway through packing before he realized he wasn't going anywhere. This is a typical type of a way I used to take advantage of Jack.
Now, I had a few questions that came in during the break, and I want to get those in because I know the people listening. When is he going to ask my question? When is he going to ask my question? Well, somebody called in and wanted to know how you developed your voice, and you began to answer that a little with the Glee Club work and the choir work that you did.
Yeah, younger. And then I did study, naturally, ever since I went with Jack Benny. I've been working with coaches and teachers, so you never stop working.
All right, and somebody else called in to find out if you wrote any of your own songs. For an example, I found out the answer to Dairy. That was from 1950. They wanted to know if you had written that song or if one of the writers on the show or somebody else.
No, one of the writers in the show did the special material on, the things about Jack Benny being born in Waukegan. It was one of the writers from the Jack Benny show.
Okay. And the final question that I got in through the phones, they mentioned that you've had one of those compilation albums put together that is being advertised on television, and without getting personal, I just want to know if that's working out for you.
I don't know. I haven't talked to that. Suffolk Marketing out of Long Island had called me on that. And these are my old RCA recordings from the years of 1947 through 1954. They're monaural, and I advertise them with a little TV pitch for the recordings. I understand that they went very well before St. Patrick's Day, so I don't know what the situation is on it. I just get a small royalty from it. So
right.
I really don't know how much. I haven't gotten any royalty checks, so I can't answer just exactly how well they have gone.
All right. Now, by working, as you mentioned, for 25 years, beginning with the Jack Benny program and being in the business for that long, working on the broadcast of 44, and you mentioned Don Wilson just passed away less than a year ago, are there any other people that you worked with back then or developed a working relationship with that you still get to see naturally out of the context of radio, but you bump into every now and then?
Well, I just did some commercials for United Airlines for the West Coast and with Frank Nelson.
Ah.
And the type of, for radio, and I believe that they are now anticipating, are doing them for television. So what it was is I say to Mr. Nelson, he says, yes.
Yes.
I say, do you remember when you used to play the floor walker on the Jack Benny show, radio show? And he says, do I? And I say something like, are you going to United Airlines too? And he says, yes. And I say, they're the only ones who have the most nonstops to San Francisco. And he says, well, that's all right if you're going to San Francisco, but I'm going to the Southwest, you know. So we did about five commercials because United flies in all of these various places.
Right.
And so I do see, I'll be seeing Phil Harris in another month. He's still going strong. We did a roast on Phil Harris up at the Bohemian Club in San Francisco just about, 2 months ago. And it was hilarious. You know, we really had a great evening. I brought George Balzer, who was one of the top writers on the Jack Benny radio show, and he really wrote some absolutely great, great material. I know that Phil wants to get a copy of it. He was just absolutely thrilled with it, and I know if Jack Benny were alive, he would be really so thrilled to hear that. But I never see Mary Livingston. I haven't seen her because we don't run in the same circle, but she does, she has her friends like Claudette Colbert and people like that, and I haven't seen her, but I understand she's in very good health and very active.
All right. Since you mentioned Jack, I don't know if this would be an uncomfortable thing food you recall, but I was just wondering about the last time that you saw Jack alive, what that circumstance was, what it was like, where was it, if you could go into that.
Well, the last time I saw Jack was about, I'd say, almost 6 months, not quite 6 months before he passed away. He came out, my daughter was being married, and he came out for the reception, which we had at our home in the Brentwood area of Los Angeles. And he got the invitation, he called up. He says, I'll be at the reception. So he came out, and he spent a couple hours there, and he was in great fettle, you know, and looked wonderful and felt good. He'd had been having some pains in his stomach, and they all thought it was psychosomatic, you know, that they ran all kinds of tests on him. He was in Cedar Sinai, and they couldn't find anything. And, of course, what he did have was the thing that he feared all his life was cancer. And he did have cancer of the pancreas, which is a very difficult and very insidious part to get the cancer in, and it's difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time they did discover it, it was all through him. I went over to his house, as a matter of fact, about 4 or 5 days before he passed away. And I was over there just to drop off a Christmas gift from my wife and the family to Jack and Mary. And I didn't know it at the time. Nobody mentioned it to me. I didn't see anyone there outside of the help. And at that time, he was up in his bedroom, and he was in the last stages, you know. That was before he died. But it was a loss that I really can say that you'll never be able to replace a Jack Benny.
That's
because
true.
He was one of a kind. Great, beautiful man.
Now, naturally, after the work that you did on the Jack Benny Show, you still had a very strong career. What other things did you do directly after your involvement with the Jack Show professionally?
What do I do now?
Well, I know the things that you mentioned now, but one of the things I was about to get into, I know that you did some work for Disney, different children's records and other things that you have done, and that's what I was talking about, basically the jobs and other occupations that you took up after the Jack Show.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of things for Walt Disney. I did the Johnny Appleseed, of course, and a number of recordings for him and his organization. He loved the Johnny Appleseed particularly, you know, and he always had a very soft spot in his heart for that particular portion that I did in Melody Time, which was the Johnny Appleseed sequence. And I did a lot of pictures for 20th Century Fox, I'll Get By, and The Girl Next Door, and then Golden Girl. And of course, I'm still very active. I'm going back to Milwaukee on the 2nd of July to do a date with the Milwaukee Symphony. And then I will be going back into Milwaukee again August the 19th, 20th, and 21st for the Irish Fest that they have on the lake there for those 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep quite active. I'll be going back into the New York area in November. I just finished up in San Francisco. I did 3 days in the Bay Area. And I keep quite active. I was over last Sunday in Phoenix at the Sun Dome. We had about 3,400 people there. And this is a gorgeous theater that they have in Sun City West, just outside of Phoenix, which would be about, still part of Phoenix, but about 30 miles out. And we had a great turnout. I was there with Connie Haynes, Little Miss Connie Haynes, and Sherry Lewis, and Jean Bell, and the Walker family, and we had an orchestra, and also Scotty Plummer, a very fine, talented young banjoist, and who does a great job with the banjo and the piano, as a matter of fact.
You don't slow down at all, do you?
Oh, I can't afford to. Not when you got 10 kids.
I've
got
family.
Five of them married off, and I've got 8 grandchildren. So that's pretty good for a 39-year-old man.
you mentioned working with Disney. How did I know Walt Disney, almost everything that was under his control during the heyday of Walt Disney Productions, he had his hand in, and I am sure he was directly responsible for you being the Johnny Appleseed singer.
Oh, yes. He had control over everything, and he was a genius at doing what he did, you know, and knowing exactly what he wanted to have and accept. He accepted nothing that was mediocre. He wanted it the best.
How did he choose you to do that?
Beg pardon?
How did he choose you to do that?
I don't know. He had heard me on Benny's shows, of course, and also on my own radio show, which I had at that time. And I came over and I auditioned for the writer, Walt Huebner. I auditioned and they wanted me to read, you know, some of the dialogue. And I did, and they liked it. But we didn't have tape in those days. We did all of, I had to do all those changes.
Yeah.
The voices, you know, go right from one from the other.
We spoke with Lucille Bliss about a month and a half ago, and she mentioned the same thing, that you couldn't make mistakes because there was no such thing as tape. It was all done on record, and it was just go and do it right because there was no doing it wrong.
Well, if you made a mistake, you just had to repeat the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that was a question of try to do it right the first time.
Well, tell you what, I have to take another break, and I'm going to do what I did before. I'm going to ask you a question and give you a minute or two of the commercials to think about it. I want to know if there is anything that you have not done professionally that you've either always wanted to do or that you wished you had an opportunity to do. And we can find out about that after the next 2 or 3 minutes of commercials.
Right.
Thank you, Dennis. Hold on, and I'll be right back to you and everybody else. We'll be right back with Dennis. Again, if there is anything you want me to ask him, we've got about 5 or 10 minutes before the interview is over. Call 969-1060 or 651-1060. We'll write it down and ask him. And right here at Touch 1060, it is 10 minutes before 4.
Please, gentlemen.
I'll take a ham sandwich on rye and a cup of coffee.
Yes, sir.
I'll have the same.
Yes, sir.
And I'll have a glass of milk and some apple pie a la mode.
Yes, sir. What flavor ice cream do you want on your pie?
Oh, no ice cream. Just put on a scoop of mashed potatoes.
Dennis, why in the world do you order pie with a scoop of mashed potatoes?
Because I'm a slow eater.
What's that got to do with it?
Ice cream melts.
Well, I asked him. He answered me. Now I'm too sick to eat.
Dennis Day. And Dennis, I asked you before the break if there was something or professionally any occupation or task that you've always wanted to do and either never had the opportunity to do or just wished you had the opportunity to do.
I don't think there is anything. I've been in every facet, I think, of the business, from radio, television, motion pictures, concerts and all, and I really don't think at my stage in life, you know, May 21st was my birthday, and I celebrated the 27th year that I was 39. So I don't think at my period of life that I regret anything that I have done in show business.
Well, not regret. I was just
no, but I mean that I have not done.
Yeah, producing or directing or
producing,
something like that.
No, I don't want that regular grind of having a TV series and that weekly thing or the soaps or doing any of those things. I've seen some of those people and they walk around like nervous idiots, you know. It burns them out so fast and they... I've had my fun and my kicks and everything else and I've enjoyed every moment of it. It's something I've always wanted to do with show business and to sing. That's why I still work.
Yeah.
I love singing as long as my voice holds up and my health. I'll go on doing it. I saw Alan Jones, incidentally, here about 2 months ago. He was in Los Angeles with a show called Star Time. Had Frankie Lane and Edie Adams and a lot of... Hildegard was in it and Gene Bell, a lot of great people. And I was amazed. Here's Alan Jones, you know, he's 80 years of age. And he was still doing the Donkey Serenade and doing it extremely well, I thought. He's still able to hit the high notes, and he looks fantastic. He's got that shock of white hair, and he's got a figure that is absolutely like a young man of 30 or 40. So know, at 80 years of age, he's still working and loving it and singing well. So that's all I hope to do is just continue on doing little things here and there. I do a lot of conventions. As I say, I played Kansas City in March for the AOH, and then I was in Indianapolis for the AOH. I was at Melody Fair and Valley Forge on the 16th of March. The 17th, I was in Westbury at the music fair there, Westbury, Long Island. Then I went to the Sands Hotel in Atlantic City with Carmel Quinn. I played two days there, and then I went back from there into Astoria, Long Island, and did a show there for the outreach program, a benefit. Father Coleman Costello does work with all these kids who have problems with drugs and alcohol. And I keep moving. So as long as I can do that, I'm very grateful.
All right. Now, when you came to Boston a couple of years ago with the big broadcast, I know it was very warmly received. Is there any possibility, you've mentioned other people doing similar shows, possibly could we see a remake or a reissuing of that type of show back here soon?
Well, they did have Star Time. I know they thought they might be able to do an idea of, which was really a variety show. It was not a radio show per se like we tried to do, but ours was really a radio variety show. But they did Star Time, and they closed it here in Los Angeles. They did, I think, a week in San Diego. And then they did, supposed to do 4 weeks here, and they did 3 weeks, so business was not that good. Los Angeles is not the best show town in the world, you know.
Yeah, you know,
San Francisco would like a show like that. But I have had inquiry to put together a show of that type for, you see, you have probably over 200 radio stations now that are doing the Music of Your Life series.
Yes.
And that's very big and very popular. And they do have conventions, these stations, in the various areas. And they would like to put together a show with myself, maybe Frank Nelson and Viola Vaughn, his wife, and maybe like a gal singer like Connie Haynes or Maggie Whiting or somebody like that, and a band, the big band, you know. So I'm considering that.
Well, I'll tell you a funny little story. The station that we're at now used to have that format, and the station that I worked at directly before this one was an all-talk station that went to that format. Basically, they just switched hands.
Right.
And it's a very popular format, and people do enjoy it. And if it does come about for you, I wish you great luck with it. And maybe we could get to see you do it live out of Boston, if possible.
Right,
Because you've got a lot of friends here, and I mentioned them in the beginning, and those are just two names, but there are many, many more people that have enjoyed your work, and I am one of them, and I hope to see you again.
Thank you.
All right. And
I've also not only got friends in Boston, I got a lot of relatives, too. We could fill the house with just my relations.
Well, you've got about 20 seconds to name them all to say hi.
I'm going to say hi to the Kellys and the Glennons and the Tartans and all of the whole bunch there, and the Henrys and the McManuses and all of them. And I hope that I'll be seeing you all fairly soon.
Dennis Day, thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, now we are going back to our regular format. ABC News is coming up very, very quickly, so I'm going to make this as fast as possible. This is WTTP, Touch Talk People here in Framingham, Natick, and Boston.